Good evening, and welcome to tonight's Talking with Friends and Family About MS teleconference. All lines are currently in a listen-only mode. After the presentation, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. I would now like to turn the conference over to Ms. Piper Reynolds, Senior Manager of Outreach and Education for the National MS Society Greater Northwest Chapter. Ms. Reynolds, you may now begin.
Thank you. And I'd like to start off by thanking everybody for joining us on our monthly teleconference this evening. As the operator said, my name is Piper Reynolds, and I'm Senior Manager of Outreach and Education for the National MS Society Greater Northwest Chapter. And it's wonderful to have you all on the line today to learn and gain new strategies in how to talk with your loved ones about multiple sclerosis. We have a very special treat for you this evening. We've got Allison Shaddy on the line, and she will be facilitating tonight's teleconference. Allison is a medical clinical social worker and is author of the book MS in Your Feelings, Handling the Ups and Downs of MS. She has counseled hundreds of people with MS and their families over the past 11 years and was personally diagnosed with MS in 1994. The first part of tonight's teleconference will be spent with Allison talking about this evening's topics. All lines will be muted until the end of Allison's presentation. At that time, you're welcome to join in a question and answer session with Allison during the last half of the teleconference, which will be moderated by the operator. Before I pass the floor off to Allison, I encourage you to consider registering for January's monthly teleconference entitled Complementary and Alternative Treatments for MS. And that'll take place on January 6th and will be facilitated by one of the leading experts in the field, Dr. Alan Bowling. And you can register for that teleconference online at msnorthwest.org or by calling our Information Resource Center at 1-800-344-4867. And so without further ado, I'll hand the floor over to Allison, and thank you all again for joining.
Thanks so much, Piper, and I just want to echo the sentiment that I'm so glad all of you are participating tonight and taking, you know, precious time out of your schedule to really sit down and try to learn a few strategies and skills tonight that might help you improve the quality of your life, you know, living with this disease. And it can be a real challenge, and communication can be a real challenge. And so I'm really excited that we're going to have an hour to talk about this, and my goal is that, you know, each one of you will walk away with a few nuggets that will be actually useful and that you really feel like you can apply in your life and in your relationships. I do think that this topic is really, really important, and it's something that isn't talked about that much. You know, the idea of communication and the importance of communication, I think a lot of people assume, well, sure, we all know how to communicate, but I want to start out tonight just by, I think, validating about how difficult it can be to communicate with our loved ones and others regarding what it's like to live with this disease. As Piper mentioned, I do counsel many, many people with MS, and I think one of the primary concerns and issues that people come to me with is a feeling of being isolated and being lonely and sometimes feeling alone and misunderstood because of having the diagnosis of MS and the way it impacts their life. And I think for many people, it is difficult to get others who don't, you know, have the diagnosis. They may live with you and they may live with the disease in the home, but they don't actually have the diagnosis. And I think it can be very difficult for others to really understand what it is that that you go through on a day-to-day basis. And for many reasons, I'm going to talk about a few of those in a minute, it can be really difficult for us to get that message across as well. And in any relationship, you know, communication is key. But we all can struggle with how to get our messages across, how to be good listeners, and how to be heard. when you add MS into the mix, that can make it even more difficult. So I think it's imperative that we all recognize that this can be difficult. I think we need to acknowledge also how important it is that we do communicate, that we do keep the lines of communication open, that we do stay connected with our loved ones and our friends. It is very difficult to do this on our own, and we need each other, and we need our loved ones. And so the better we are at communicating, the better we are at feeling understood and getting our message across, the more likely we are to be able to sustain our relationships and to have good feelings with one another. So, you know, I just want to point out some of the different things that I have seen that I think make communication especially challenging for people who have MS and for their loved ones. And one of the things is, quite frankly, the invisibility of this disease. You know, people look at us and they see, you know, if we're not wheelchair-bound or not using a cane, that we look, you know, fairly healthy a lot of the time, and we don't look like we're dealing with any kind of special challenges or issues. And so people base a lot, we get a lot of information on what we see, and therefore it really is a lot on our shoulders, a lot of our responsibility to articulate to people what it is we're experiencing. Because when they look at us, they may see someone who looks totally capable, you know, and just as healthy and, you know, able-bodied as they are, when in fact we may be really struggling that day. So that's one thing that is an extra challenge, is the invisibility. I think that there's a lot of misunderstanding in general about this disease. I was, you know, once you get the disease, it's easy to assume that other people know what it is or have had some experience with it, but not everybody has, and not everybody does know much about MS. In fact, I was shocked at how little most people do know, or they think it's muscular dystrophy, or there's a lot of education that still needs to be done out there. So, you know, I think just the disease itself is something that people don't know a lot about, so there can be a lot of misunderstandings that occur on that front. I think oftentimes denial plays a role in misunderstanding. In other words, you know, it's hard for our loved ones to see that we're struggling. It's hard for them to hear that we have a serious or chronic illness that, you know, at this point there is no cure for. And sometimes a coping mechanism, not just for the person with MS, but also for family members and loved ones, is to just pretend that everything is fine. And for this reason, you know, they may not see what you feel they should see, or they may not understand what seems to be obvious to you. Once people do acknowledge, you know, what you're trying to tell them, or acknowledge that there's a real problem, that often means they have to change their behavior, or they have to step up to the plate in a different way. Maybe they have to do more around the house, or work harder, or take on the sole responsibility of, you know, providing financially. So I do think that denial often plays a role in people feeling misunderstood, and our own denial as well. You know, when we try to fake it, when we try to push through bad days, when we minimize what our experience is, it adds confusion and it adds to misunderstanding, you know, for the people around us. It makes it very difficult for them to get it because we're hiding things from them. So, you know, that's a different kind of aspect that people, I think, don't often really recognize or acknowledge that's going on in their communication patterns. Another thing that I often see occur is, you know, cognitive issues. Many, many people with MS have varying degrees of cognitive challenges. I think it's something like up to 50 or 60% of people do struggle with things like word finding, or, you know, being able to kind of respond quickly, to organize their thoughts, especially if there are distractions or things going on in the room, you know, like a TV or a radio on. We tend to get frustrated. We tend to get short, maybe lose our temper in ways that we might not have done before. And part of that can be fatigue. You know, part of it can be cognitive issues. But all of these things contribute to misunderstandings, to difficulty communicating. And these are issues that not, you know, the general population isn't having to deal with. So That's another thing to kind of add to one of the challenges, or some of the challenges, excuse me. The other thing that, you know, we deal with is that there's a very fluid nature to this disease. So there are times when we are doing really well and we can take on a lot in a day, hopefully. And then there are times when really we just have hit that wall and we're not able to do much of anything. And this fluctuation can occur from hour to hour, minute to minute, sometimes even in a day. And this can be very confusing and very frustrating for those around us and those who love us, because if we aren't communicating, you know, if we're not letting people know where we're at, they're going to make a lot of assumptions, you know, and that's understandable. But those assumptions could really be off base, because the way we're feeling and the way we're doing can really change from moment to moment. So if you think about it, you know, these are a lot of different obstacles to our ability to communicate and to feel understood. And I'm sure I'm missing some of them, and you all may bring up something, you know, in the question and answer period that I didn't think of. But those are just some of the major obstacles that I think we all face from time to time. One of the things that seems to happen a lot is that there's this tendency, and I think it's in all relationships, especially with couples, but we want the other person to be able to read our mind. You know, we really would like for our partners or, you know, family members to just be able to look at us and know what we want or what we need or what we feel. And sometimes we really expect that of our partners. And I think that this is, you know, quite frankly, a very unrealistic expectation, and that we're going to be perpetually disappointed if we look to others to be able to just know what we're thinking and what we're feeling. Now, it can be difficult to know how to share with, you know, others what we're thinking, what we're feeling. And some of us kind of have a knack for that, and some of us may be a little bit more reserved, and, you know, perhaps we weren't the best communicators prior to getting this diagnosis, and, you know, now we have these additional challenges, and it can make it even harder. So we're going to talk a little bit about some of the different, you know, tricks and things that we can do to better get our message across. One suggestion I just want to make, and again, this is one of those little nuggets or tips. I've heard it put in other ways, but one of the things that I hear people say is, I don't want to feel like I'm complaining all the time, or I don't, you know, always want to be saying I'm tired. And this is understandable. You know, no one wants to feel like they're a downer. And so this, again, feeds into that desire to sort of hide things. And yet, believe me, we're not really hiding anything, because our fatigue and other issues come out in other ways. They just come out in ways that aren't really productive, like in frustration or anger or, you know, harsh words. So one tip is to put a little sticky note up on the refrigerator or in the bathroom mirror that kind of is a rating system of, you know, 1 to 5, 1 being this is a great day or your energy level is fantastic, 5 maybe being this is, you know, the worst you get, and you have no energy and no interest in doing anything, including cooking dinner or what have you. And this is a way for family members to kind of check in with you without having to ask you, so you don't feel like you're being nagged, and without you having to necessarily verbalize what's going on and feeling like you're, you know, complaining or being a downer. But it's just a quick way that people can kind of check in and everybody get a sense of how you're doing, maybe how, you know, how much they need to help that night, that sort of thing. So I think that's really a good little tip. And the other thing I want to suggest is that you find a language that makes sense to you that describes what it's like, you know, for you to have this disease. That may take a little work. You know, you may want to sit down and practice writing out, you know, what it's like for you. You know, how does this impact you? What is it like for you on a day-to-day basis? And then if you can get a synopsis of that, you know, a quick, I call it the elevator pitch version, so that, you know, when someone asks you, well, what's it like, you know, you'll have an answer, or you can use a language that someone else understands. And I've heard people use various descriptions, you know, like, well, I feel like Jell-O, or my body just feels like spaghetti. You know, for me, I talk about if I get too tired or I'm out in heat, it's like what kryptonite is to Superman. You know, I just can't even function, or, you know, think clearly. I'm just incapacitated. So to find a way that, and a language and words that make sense to you, that might also make sense to someone else, I think can be a really a good thing to be able to do, so that, you know, you can get across to other people what is actually going on. So, you know, like I said earlier, sometimes people just assume that we all know how to communicate and that it's a very simple and easy thing. But there are actually skills and techniques and you know, different things that we need to keep in mind when we talk about communication. It's something that's learned, you know, just like many other things that we have to learn. And one of the things I suggest to people, and this is an exercise actually that's in my book that Piper mentioned, but I'm just going to kind of, it's a sort of a taking of the pulse of your own communication style. You know, this way you can learn whether you're more of a listener, you know, and need more help expressing yourself, or perhaps you're more of a talker and need to improve your listening skills. What's important is that you get a sense of where you need improvement. So you can ask yourself that simple question, you know, am I more of a talker, or am I more of a listener? But there are various, you know, questions that you can ask yourself. For instance, do you often feel misunderstood? If so, you know, you may need to be working on, you know, better expressing yourself. Do people frequently interrupt you? Again, that may mean that, you know, people who are more verbal than you kind of take over the conversation. I feel anxious when I speak up for myself. If this is true, again, you may need work on learning how to be more self-assertive and direct. So, you know, just to kind of sometimes maybe some of the opposite questions would be, I'm often told I don't listen, or I get impatient when others are talking. Or when others are speaking, I'm thinking more about how I might respond to them rather than what's being said. If these types of questions are true, then you probably need to work on your listening skills. But there are some basic tips and techniques that I think can help all of us to both be better listeners and to be better communicators in terms of getting our message across. One of the things that I think can be really helpful is to time your conversations. So try to bring up issues when you feel at your best, you know, when you have the energy and you know that you can handle it, especially if they're difficult conversations or emotionally charged conversations. You want to be able to, you know, do these. If mornings are your best time, then do it in the mornings. Try not to have conversations when your emotions are already, you know, out of control. And that's not saying that you can't be angry or frustrated or hurt, but you don't want to be so irrational and upset that you're not making sense, or that the person who you're trying to communicate with starts to shut you down and shut you out. Another technique that, you know, for people who maybe aren't as quick on their feet, you know, able to just like I'm having problems doing now, you know, just aren't maybe as sharp, and you know if this is a problem for you or not, you may want to write out the major points you need to get across before you start speaking. You know, have some kind of outline and something prepared. This will also help you to stay on track and not go off into too many different tangents. And again, if we're having cognitive issues, that can be a big problem for people. Another suggestion is not to use "you never" or "you always" type of statements, or blaming type statements. You want to take responsibility for how you feel, not necessarily telling the other person how they feel, but really, you know, taking your part and your ownership in how something is making you feel. And that would involve using a feeling statement such as, you know, I feel that you get upset when I ask you to help around the house, or I feel guilty asking you to help, you know, because I can't do as much around the house anymore. When you start a statement with an I feel, it really helps the other person feel less defensive. And, you know, quite frankly, it's very hard to dispute, you know, a statement like that because you're just saying how you feel. It's important to realize that others may not always agree with you, but there is some satisfaction in getting your message or your feelings across. And it may not be the truth, but it's your truth. And what you have to say is valid and it is worthwhile and it is important, you know, that you get it across, get that message across. And of course, you want to avoid, you know, making personal attacks or insults. You want to choose the right setting. You want to do things in a space where there aren't a lot of distractions, you know, where you're not having a TV or a radio competing with your message. You know, perhaps doing it in an environment that's calming and relaxing for you, like the outdoors or at the beach. You know, if you're able to walk, going on a walk. Sometimes people have their best conversations when they're out in nature. You know, so give some thought, especially when it's an important discussion that you're trying to have. And I think also maintaining eye contact and using your body language effectively, you know, turning towards the person, being right in front of them, you know, so that you're giving and you're receiving with your body, with your eyes, you know, leaning toward and forward, showing that you're listening, you know, all these types of things really, you know, help you to get your message across. And this is might sound a little odd, but I think it's often a problem for women especially, is that, you know, assume that what you have to say is worthwhile. Assume that what you have to say is valid and important. You know, have the confidence to speak up and have the confidence that the people in your lives can hear it, you know, and they can take it. You may want to check in with the person that you're speaking with and ask if they are understanding what you're saying, you know, or if you need further clarification. So those are some tips on how to better sort of get your message across. In terms of listening, you know, I think in many respects listening is kind of becoming a lost art. And it can be, you know, very difficult, especially if you weren't heard or acknowledged when you were growing up or you haven't had a good role model. Sometimes just basic listening skills can be difficult, and they can be something that, you know, you don't necessarily grow up knowing how to do. So just a few really simple tips for that is, you know, avoid interrupting. You want to let the other person really finish their thought or make their point, and you want to ask the same of them. And I find that a lot of times people with cognitive issues, if there's any interruption, it completely gets you off track, and it can be very, very frustrating, and you can't, you know, find your place again. So you want to avoid interrupting, and you want to ask the person that you're talking to please not interrupt you. If you're not understanding what someone's telling you, ask for further clarification. You know, say, so what you're saying is. Another nice trick is, you know, don't feel like you have to respond right away when someone says something to you. If you need time, again, sometimes we process things a little slower. You might want to say, please let me think about that, or give me a night to sleep on that, or I'm going to need some time to digest that, and I'll get back to you. So that you're not feeling like on the spot you have to, you know, respond. Another thing that we're often tempted to do is to give suggestions or advice, or we might want to fix the problem. And I the feedback I often get from people is that that's not really what they want when they're talking. And if you put yourself in a recent situation where maybe you were sharing a problem and the person jumped in and started trying to tell you what to do to fix it or make it better, that tends to cause us to shut down and doesn't really allow for further exploration of feelings. Oftentimes, the gift that people are really looking for is to just be heard. And if you can do that much, if you can just sit in a space and allow a person to feel fully heard and fully paid attention to, you're giving them a huge gift. And this is something I tell family members, you know, when they sometimes feel helpless or they can't do anything or can't fix the problem, I try to reinforce to them that just listening is a huge, huge present or gift that they are giving another person. So that's a big one. Also, try not to talk people out of their feelings or discount their feelings, no matter how painful it might be for you to hear what they're saying. You may share something that you're feeling, and your loved one may share something that they're feeling that you don't really want to hear. And it can be tempting to discount it or explain it away or try to talk them out of what they're feeling or saying. And again, that's not something that's going to further the conversation. Asking open-ended questions to encourage further discussion is also really helpful. You know, someone may say, well, I'm feeling really frustrated today, rather than just leaving it there, saying, you know, what's making you feel frustrated, or how do you know you're feeling frustrated? What's different about today? So just simple questions that will allow somebody to sort of take a conversation to that next step. And, you know, in terms of barriers to communication, there are a few things that are pretty simple, but, you know, you don't want to have conversations that are really important when you're drinking, you know, when emotions are running really high, when other people are in the room that you don't really want to be around or in the room when you're having this conversation. And just being aware of how we present ourselves, how we use our body language, it's all really important. There's some statistics that say that our nonverbal cues are 55% effective in terms of getting our message across. Our tone of voice is actually 38% effective, and that the words we say are really only 7% effective in delivering the message that we're saying. So your voice and your body are really important tools when you're talking about communicating. So hopefully some of these suggestions, are going to help you in terms of talking to others. And, I think the one thing I really want to stress here is that staying connected and, keeping your relationships on track and making sure that, you're not letting things just sort of fall into a rut or, misunderstandings that eventually can't get fixed. It's just really, really important that you work on this and you not just let that communication piece fall to the wayside. Hopefully some of these suggestions, are enough to get you going and get you practicing, doing some things a little differently. If you're really having a tough time getting your message across or feeling heard, you might even want to consider going to, some couples therapy or family therapy. There are family therapists and mediators that are, really helpful in helping you to identify where your barriers of communication are and helping to make suggestions on how to change some non-productive patterns. Oftentimes, when we've been in relationships for a long time, these sort of patterns of communication become so entrenched, we don't even see what we're doing, and it takes sort of a third party or an outsider to bring to our attention kind of what's not working well for us. So those are, some of the different suggestions on tips and things that you can do to become a better listener, some things about barriers to communication. There's sort of a special topic, and I have a couple of minutes here before opening it up to questions, I think. So I do want to just say that one question that often comes up is, you know, talking to others about MS, and one in particular is talking to your kids about MS. And I think parents are often really conflicted and confused about how to talk with their kids about this disease. And, you know, what you reveal to your children is a very personal decision, and it's different for every family. I think your relationship with your child and the knowledge of your child's needs is a factor in, you know, in terms of what's appropriate to disclose and what's best left unsaid. But in general, I just want you to keep in mind that kids tend to pick up on the emotional mood of the house. They sense when things are wrong, and this often can create anxiety. So if nothing is said about the subject, then MS can sort of become that pink elephant in the room that everyone tiptoes around and pretends is not there. And when kids are not given the facts, they tend to imagine the worst. So when you give your kids information, you validate their experience of what they're seeing already and what's going on. You know, you acknowledge that something has changed. And talking about the disease also sort of opens the door up for them to be able to ask you questions and to get clarification. And I'm not suggesting that you tell them everything. You know, things need to be age appropriate, and you know your child best and are the best judge of that. But typically there is a sense that something's going on, and it is helpful to kind of get some of that out on the table. There's a really good book called How to Help Children Through a Parent's Serious Illness, and this is by Kathleen McHugh. And she suggests telling your kids three things. Tell them that you're ill, tell them the name of your disease, and tell them your best understanding of what may happen. I think the MS Society also has some guidelines and some brochures that are available about talking to kids about MS. You know, you may want to reassure them that it's not contagious. You know, let your kids know that they're not to blame. Explain that you won't necessarily die from this disease, but that some days are going to be better than others. Encourage your kids to ask questions. These are just a few, you know, general tips that might be helpful when you're looking at talking to your kids about things that are going on. So that's a lot of information to just sort of throw out there at you all at once. I think I will stop at this point and open it up for questions, concerns, or if somebody would like to, you know, add to something that I have said, I'm welcome to hear, you know, you're welcome to share that. I'd love to hear your experience as well. So, Jenny, at this point, if you want to ask the participants if there's any specific questions or ways that I might be able to help them, that would be great.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press the number 1 key on your phone. Again, if you have any questions, please press the number 1 key now. Our first question comes from Barbara. Barbara, please go ahead.
Yes, I am very interested in how the best way is to ask for help. I do not have family members, so I have to rely on my friends. And I don't want to alienate my friends by being the needy one, and whenever they hear my voice, you know, their voice changes. You know, they answer the phone, hello, and then I say, it's Barbara, and they say, oh, hi. I don't want to be one of those people. So how do I ask for help when I really need it without destroying my friendships with my friends?
All right, Barbara. I think that's a really good question. And I think that is one of the hardest things that, you know, that people face is having to ask for help. None of us want to have to ask for help. We'd all prefer to be the one that's giving the help. And I think that I'm not sure if I'm hearing you say that you already feel like this has begun to alienate your friends, or if you're just afraid it might happen. But, you know, my experience, and when you talk to others, and when you think about yourself, how you have felt when you've been able to help somebody else, I think that often, you know, accepting help from others is really a gift to them. It allows other people to feel needed. It allows other people to feel appreciated. To care for the needs of another really affirms our own value and our own purpose for living. And, you know, your vulnerabilities may teach another person, empathy. It may help another person build self-esteem when they feel like they can do for you. And I think the other thing is that there's always ways that we can, you know, be helpful to others as well, and to not forget that. Something as simple as being a good listener to friends. You know, after I got diagnosed, I was a very, very busy person. I was always on the go, really busy. And some of the comments that I got from friends afterwards said, you know, that they felt I had become a better listener and I had slowed down a little bit more. And, really took the time when they called to be there and to be present. And, again, I was saying earlier, I think that's a huge gift. So I think it's really important, too, to remember what you have to offer them and to be willing to, make suggestions to them. Like, I don't know what you're asking help for, but if they're giving you a ride somewhere, perhaps you can offer to, bake them a pie or chip in for the gas or, make some phone calls for them if they're needing help getting something done. I think that there's just always something that we have to offer as well, and that it's important for us to remember that even though we need help from time to time, we still have a lot to offer. And I hope, Barbara, you stayed on the line because I'd like to get some feedback from you about how that sounds or if there's been some other experience that you've had that you want to talk about.
I am here. My situation is that I can hardly do anything for myself. And since I don't have anybody, I need help all the time. I need help, moving my wheelchair around. I need help with my laundry. I need help, with all sorts of, the only thing I don't need help with is bathing and dressing. And I don't have enough money to pay for a helper. So, I'm relying on my friends to do that. And, sometimes, like you were saying, you put on a happy face, and I do. I pretend like everything's fine, and I'm laughing, and I'm joking, and I'm smiling when things are horrible. And I don't think people take me seriously. So when I say I really need something, they don't listen to me. They don't hear that there's a real need at that particular point. And I'm always really careful to give them an out, I won't say I need it done within the next hour. I say in the next couple of days or in the next week, do you have time to help me?
Yeah, I mean, this is a tough situation because, when you're saying the level of your needs and that there's really no primary caregiver is what I'm hearing you say. And so you're having to really, rely on people that, don't really feel like it's their responsibility necessarily to help you with all these things. And one thing I would say is that the Washington chapter there may have some resources available for you. Have you talked to the National MS Society at all about, are there resources where they could help with some in-home care or some hours?
Yes, I have, and unfortunately, they've all been dead ends. So, there is nobody out there that's geared up to help individuals like me. They're out there to help organizations. There's like Meals on Wheels, and there's the soup kitchens and all sorts of stuff. But in terms of actually getting physical help, there isn't. And I've gone places and talked to people till I'm blue in the face, and there just isn't any place set up.
Mm. That is really, really frustrating. It sounds like you do have people who are helping you, though. Are you feeling like they're getting burned out? Or
Well, yes, that's exactly how I feel.
Yeah.
I mean, I value them as friends. I don't want to lose them as friends, and I don't want them to think of me as just, oh, she's needy, she's a sponge, I have to keep giving and all of this to her. And because they're super nice people, they're great to be around, they're good conversationalists, so I don't want to lose them as friends. And I just, it's a really fine line between, you know, making, losing them as friends and making them view me not as a friend anymore, but as a needy person.
Now, I could see how that would be very, very challenging for you. When I was saying that we all still have something to offer, did anything resonate for you there in terms of what you give them or what they get out of their relationship with you?
I do. I get compliments all the time about how helpful I am and how much I give and, you know, and how pleasant I am to be around and how what a joy it is. I get that all the time. So whatever I'm doing right. And
it's working because, yeah, you're getting that kind of feedback, which is, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Do you know what you're doing? I mean,
well, I mean,
do you know what you offer them?
Well, I don't complain, for one thing, and I think that's a benefit to my friends, is I don't complain. And I usually do not go out if I'm feeling really, really bad, bad enough that I can't hide it. Then I don't go, well, I'll cancel an appointment or not go to a function or whatever. So when I'm out, I feel like I'm on, I'm performing, and apparently that works for them. So that's what I do.
And would you also say that you're very appreciative of their help?
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Yeah.
That's the other thing. I get so many compliments on my thank you notes. They say,
yeah.
Oh, I've never read such a beautiful thank you note. So nothing happens to me that I do not thank them for.
Yeah, and I think that goes a long way. And if people are listening, you know, to this, I really believe that most people do get satisfaction and joy out of helping and doing for others. And when someone in their life is letting them know specifically something they can do that would be of a big help, that makes it, you know, that adds something to their life. And I want you to be able to hear that. I think if that wasn't the case, you know, you probably wouldn't still have these people around. And it sounds like you're doing a lot of things right. And, you know, oh, I lost my train of thought, but there was something I wanted to say about that, about thanking others and being appreciative. We're all at some point going to need someone in our lives, and you know, being able to ask in a way that shows you're appreciative, that doesn't, you know, come across as you're expecting it or demanding it. I think people, you know, tend to be pretty receptive to that. So I'm really glad for you that you do have the friends that you have and that you have these people in your life, and keep doing the things that you're doing that are working. Yeah, but I know it's not easy to ask for help. I totally get that.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate
it. Yeah, thank you for sharing your situation.
Our next question, I'm sorry.
Oh, that's all. I was just going to check in with you, see if there was somebody else.
Yes, ma'am. Our next question comes from Desiree. Desiree, please go ahead.
Yeah, I have a slightly different situation. I was diagnosed about a year ago with MS, and I was very energetic and very capable and competent at work, and this past spring, my symptoms became more severe, more symptoms appeared, and the frequency and severity of them resulted in me being put on short-term disability and now a long-term disability. I have to admit that I was in my own state of denial.
Yeah.
And I have been working since I was 14, and I was not going to allow MS to be the reason I did not fully participate in the workforce, be a great mom, and continue to be an active community member. When I had to accept my limitations, what I began to experience is very intrusive family members who I think felt that I should be asking them for help rather than some friends.
Huh.
And it was my sister-in-law. And it got very, very emotionally charged between me and my husband because he could not understand why I was basically rejecting her help, telling her I would call her if needed. I told her I have things covered and so on and so on, and doing X and another person's doing Y. But I did suggest to her that she should call her brother, my husband. And then one day she called me and I called her back. And I said to her, you know, Connie, I really have that covered. And she said, well, you know, Richard's a really busy person. He travels a lot. And he's a senior manager at a company. And he just doesn't have the kind of time that may be needed. And it really caused me to lash out and say, you know, I've said to you over and over again, if I need your help, I will call you. If I haven't called you, it means I don't need it or want it. And I finally said to my husband, you have got to tell her to please stop calling me. And it got, you know, and he said no. He thought I was being illogical. And felt that I was rejecting help from his family, but asking close friends to do things that he thought family members could do for me.
Oh, interesting. So
and
he kind of got caught in the middle.
Him, you know, I'm the one who is sick. I'm the one asking for the people who I feel most comfortable with.
Right.
I wish it was your sister, but it's not.
Right.
And he wouldn't talk to her, and she called my house one morning at 6:20, and I didn't pick up the phone, so she called my son's cell, and I was shocked that someone would call my house at 6:23 a.m. in the morning to chit-chat with my son to see how he's doing. Made us late for catching the bus, and I ended up having to drive my son to school. I'm not supposed to be driving long distances. I came back, and I had to cancel all my appointments for the rest of the day. And I cried because I was in so much pain from the fatigue and the aches. And by 4 o'clock, I realized if my husband can't do it, I will have to call her. And that's what I did. I left a voicemail message. And I said to her, if you are truly interested in helping our family unit and helping our son adjust to my illness, then you need to stop calling when you're not being asked to help. And to call at 6:23 a.m. in the morning and making us late for the bus added to my stress.
Well,
if I'm not healthy, then my son doesn't have a healthy mother.
It sounds like you are a pretty clear communicator, Desiree.
I asked her three times, you know how to get your message across. And I sent her an email.
Mm-hmm.
And she still wouldn't stop, and my husband
felt like he was a little caught in the middle there, but it's a marital problem, though.
And I guess what I'm saying is, I don't want to offend anyone, but when I did this little exercise that you guys gave us with the circles, she doesn't even make it into the second circle.
Yeah, the wheel of support.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And it's only I can't explain it to my husband. She's family. I don't want to ask her for help. She stresses
me out
for some reason.
Well, our relationships are very different with each person. And one thing you said that's really important is that we don't who you ask for help, that's a very intimate and vulnerable type of thing to do with someone, and you need to feel close to that person, and you need to have a trusting relationship, and that is your choice, you know, who you get to ask for help, and you have identified the people in your life that, you know, that works for you, and it sounds like you've been pretty clear, you know, with others in your life about what's working for you, and I commend you for.
But I think what bothers me is, you know, I have now alienated a few people in the process of defending myself.
Yeah, and sometimes people put us in a position where we don't really have any other choice. And it sounds like you tried many tactful ways to handle this, and it wasn't until you really, you know, put that wall up that you were heard.
Well, I don't, what I guess I'm a realist. Over the course of this disease, I will probably call upon my sister-in-law. And I'm wondering if I have, what's the balance between asking people, please give us some space because we're trying to figure out what the new norm is.
I think that's a beautiful way to say
it. And at the same time, you know,
sometimes writing a letter, you know, as things get sort of emotionally charged when you try to talk, I think then you can't be interrupted, you know, that she has time to think about it, you have time to think about how you want to say it. Maybe that would be a good next step. Because when you express yourself, I mean, you come across very clearly, and I think that's
lovely. Oh, I've been accused of being rude to his family, and so direct that he is calls me very inappropriate words. And I said to him one time, you can call me whatever you want. My number one priority is getting healthy and taking care of our family, not appearances or worrying about your family. Mm. But I have actually been stressed out by my husband's lack of support and, more importantly, by people not hearing me, and I finally, you know, I've given up communicating, but maybe writing a letter is the way to do it. I basically what I do is I avoid. I don't go to any family events.
Sometimes that takes some of the emotional charge out of things, and, you know, if the tone tends to get defensive or what have you, you know, that doesn't come out in a letter, and, you know, I think that would be a good next step, and I'm aware we've only got a few more minutes. I want to make sure if anybody else has a question that I can answer it for them. But try that, Desiree. And thank you so much for sharing your experience with us.
Yeah, I mean, I'm so sorry for the first person who feels like she can't ask people, and I'm getting too much help.
It's all different experiences, I tell you what. But thanks for sharing yours, Desiree.
Well, and thank you for the suggestion of writing a letter. Maybe after the holidays, I can sit down and do that.
Okay. Sounds good. Take care.
Okay.
Our next question comes from Karen. Karen, please go ahead.
Hey, Allison. It's Karen.
Hey, Karen. How are you?
Doing good, thanks.
Good.
That's my standard reply. Doing good. Hey, and I'm kind of spacing out here on what I was going to say because I was really – have a lot of empathy for Barbara, the first person that doesn't have anybody to confide in and let go. So I feel bad for her. But it sounds like she's handling it great with positive attitude, and I'm trying to remember what I was going to say, what I was going to ask. Let's see here. I can't really think of what I was going to say, but...
it's okay. Don't feel any pressure. You might feel a little pressure. It's nerve-wracking when you...
Well, I was enjoying listening to the other people, too. So, I know with my family members, I usually just say, I don't really communicate well. I usually just say, I'm not functioning well today. and that kind of, and I say it in a grumpy way, so that means leave me alone. But and like Barbara, I learned that not to really burden my friends with how I'm really feeling, and you know that can feel pretty alone.
Yeah.
But also, how do you really reply to people? You want to feel validated in what you're feeling, like to friends or people who say, closer friends that you want to, that say, how are you doing? You might reply that, I'm really having trouble thinking today. I'm just, you know, there's a block and I'm feeling foggy. And then all of a sudden people go, oh, I know exactly how you feel. You know, I get foggy thinking or I have pins and needles or, you know, how do you really say tactfully that this is deeper or this is more than, you know, that without being a downer?
Well, what is it, I mean, the question, I know how I would respond, but I guess the question I have for you is, how does it make you feel when someone answers that way?
Well, like not validated, like it's not real or it's not, they don't get the depth of it or what
right.
I'm really going through.
Kind of discounted and
yeah, discounted.
Minimized.
Yeah.
And that might be, you know, it's all in how you say it, right? But that could be a good response. You know, when I've had people say, oh, I get tired too, or, oh, yeah, I'm having a senior moment, and I'll say, you know, I'm trying to tell you how what I'm experiencing, and when you come back with the response like that, it really kind of makes me feel belittled and minimizing my experience because I do have a neurological disorder, and it's not just a senior moment, or it's not just the typical fatigue. And I think a lot of times people do that because they think they're making us feel better
mm-hmm.
or they're trying to, like, make it seem like what we're going through isn't so bad. Maybe they're trying to make themselves feel better. Maybe they're trying to make us feel better. But it can be kind of a wake-up call when you just say, you know, when you respond like that, it makes me, you know, feel like discounted, like you're not validating how I'm feeling or what my experience
mm-hmm.
is. And I just really need, you know, you to hear how difficult this is for me.
Oh, that's good.
Just to come back with what it's making you feel like, you know,
mm-hmm.
what that kind of response makes you feel like. And I'm not saying you can do this with everyone. This is another thing you really learn in having this disease is there's going to be a handful of people that are really going to stick with you and that it's going to be an authentic and real relationship, you know, and it does help you figure out real fast who your real true friends are, and they're not always your family. And
yeah,
well,
yeah, that's definitely
you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, but that takes practice to come back with what something is making you feel like, you know, because that's not an automatic thing for us necessarily to do.
Yeah, well, you know, you don't want to offend the other person by whatever.
Yeah, but I think there's a way to say it without being offensive, but being real, you know, which is, wow, I'm just realizing when you say that, it really makes me feel like you're not hearing me or you're minimizing, you know, the depth of what I'm experiencing, and I kind of feel shut out, you know, when that happens, or whatever it is, and not really say, I mean, I just think there are ways, and that's why it takes a little bit of practice, but there are ways to say it where it's just a genuine, real, intimate exchange versus an attacking or an accusing type of exchange. And yeah.
Because for me to even say that is beyond the, you know, normally I say what I said to you, feeling great, you know, really good.
Right.
So if I'm taking that extra step and then I get, yeah, I feel rejected when they say that, and it's like, okay, that just shuts me up more.
Right. And it's already hard enough for you to share what you started
yeah.
with. You know, you're making me think of something else I really want to just encourage the group to do, is that there will be no one who will understand more than somebody else who has MS. And if you have an opportunity to go to a support group or to meet other people with MS, and I do these regular phone groups through the Washington chapter, which I think they're called maybe something else now, but these phone groups, and then I do these almost quarterly where people, it's kind of like this, but it's like in 6 or 8 week session, and people can call in and we talk and we kind of get to know each other, and then afterwards if people want to stay connected, you can share emails, and there, you know, there are a ton of support groups out there. So there are peer support groups. I would really encourage you and anyone else who is feeling kind of misunderstood or, you know, shut out, to reach out to other people who have the disease, because they're going to get it unlike anybody else. And where I used to live, I joined a committee and volunteered to put these women conferences on, and the group of women that were on that committee with me all had MS, and they became some of my best, closest friends and best support, you know, group ever, because they got it and we could really be there and help each other. So I think I'm going to have to end on that note, because I realize that we're almost out of time, and I have a little thing I need to read at the end to tell you guys how to get, you know, more resources if you're interested. So thank you so much for sharing your experience. And, yeah, I think, Jenny, I'm going to need to stop taking questions at this point and wrap up with this this last paragraph here. Okay? So the National MS Society provides the most up-to-date and comprehensive information and education for people living with MS, family and friends, and healthcare professionals. Finding answers and making decisions relies on having the right information at the right time. MS navigators are available to assist you with MS concerns, large and small. These skilled professionals will listen, discuss, and connect you with the resources to take you to the next step. Whether you're a person living with multiple sclerosis or a friend or caregiver, the National MS Society is a partner in helping you find information and resources that you need. Connect to an MS navigator by calling 1-800-344-4867 and pressing option 1. So that's 1-800-344-4867. Press option 1. And Piper is going to be sending you all a questionnaire regarding you know, how this went for you. And yeah, and I'll be doing a teleconference series, I believe, in April. If you're interested in participating in that, I think it's either a 6 or an 8 week dealing with all the different invisible symptoms of living with MS. So I'd urge you to join us for that. And just want to thank all of you for tuning in and listening and for sharing your experience and challenges. And I'm honored and privileged to have had this time to spend with you all, and hope that that this has been helpful. And with that, I'm going to say goodnight. Bye-bye.